So hey y'all, and welcome back. My name is Jasmine Nettles, and I am one of your hosts for the Reze Chat podcast. I have another special guest with me. If you can't tell, I'm gonna say that probably about everybody that I bring on this episode. But today we're gonna talk about something that was pivotal in my journey in higher education, and that's the courage to unlearn in order to relearn. And the person that is here is the person who taught me how to do that. So Timmy Tom, can you introduce yourself to the people?
Hello, everyone. Dr. Thomas Bruick. I'm a faculty member and program coordinator in the College Student Personnel Administration Program at the University of Central Arkansas, where I have the wonderful opportunity to work with graduate students, similar to Jazz, now several years ago, which feels crazy.
Yeah, six, seven.
Six.
I
Six.
graduated in
Six.
2020.
Yeah. Don't add more years
Don't
to
add more to
me.
it.
But prior to being in the faculty role, I was on the practitioner end. I worked in residence life for almost a decade, and then the last half of that was kind of half res life, half student success. And then now I'm in the faculty role, and then something new this fall. I'm starting to work with first year students again as part of my role, not leaving the master's program or anything, just getting back to some of that student success work alongside it.
Cool. See, I didn't know that. Congrats, Tom.
Thank you.
I'm gonna call him probably several different nicknames, everybody. Just go with it, okay? I love it. So, like I said, today I want to talk about what it takes to unlearn things that you've always known from an educational standpoint. Because a lot of times when we talk about student affairs work and how personal those connections are, our beliefs and our values come with that.
Yeah.
And sometimes in this field, that is not something we have the luxury of being able to use or rely on when we're making decisions, when we're choosing jobs, or just what we do in general. I know specifically in my current role for curriculum, living learning communities, if I programmed or I built a curriculum simply around what I understood, I would get nowhere, or I would be the only person who understood it, right? So, my first question for you, what are some common mindsets or practices that our higher ed professionals are, what's affected by having the courage to unlearn?
Definitely. So I think the first thing that always comes to mind here is even just the idea of best practice. At first, I have to give credit where credit is due. One of my faculty members, when I was in my doctoral program, Dr. Ouyang Poon, is who introduced me to this idea of unlearning as part of your learning process. And then, like we do, we take good things that work well and we implement it with others, similar to what you were talking about earlier, Jazz. So I think first, it makes me think about this idea of best practice and how it's really not a reality in our work. When we think about the incredibly rich context of our work, the idea of a singular best practice or a set of, I always say there's no manual for this work, right? And so I think from the conceptual level, it requires this idea that I'm not looking for the one right answer. Right, I need this approach that allows me to explore, allows me to examine myself, my context around me, my institutional context, my students, my colleagues, everything that goes into that complex context, and really thinking about this idea of best process, right? And so, what is my process of thinking, planning, and then doing before, so that our actions are grounded in that process, not in this idea of, well, this is what's best. Kind of like you were saying earlier, this is what's best based on my current understanding at this moment in time, right? We can stagnate when that's the approach we take.
I love that. And I think that one of the things that we did a lot of when we were in grad school was just having conversations. And I think that is a lost art when we look at higher education now. I don't know if we can blame the panini press pandemic if we want to, but I think that at this point there has become a comfort in doing what we know and processing in a way that's comfortable to us that people just rely on. And that's where people stay. I know in my current experience with higher ed and just the roles that I've had, having to fight against the system of what we've always done, things like that has been the biggest thing. So I would say, what's the most, if you had to like start at the beginning, what's the most important initial thought or process for that I need to unlearn this. What do you think that looks like for professionals?
No, I think it that's a wonderful question. I think it fundamentally is pushing against the flow of our work, right? So it's the idea of fast versus slow thinking, which comes from Daniel Kahneman. And there's a wonderful chapter in Student Affairs by the Numbers by Sriram, who kind of puts that in the higher ed context. But everything about our work is often structured to move quickly. Right, everything's an emergency, and what happens is we become pre-programmed to be doers and not thinkers.
Thinkers.
So we need to be both. Right now, the other side's true. We can't just sit back and talk all day and never do anything. Right?
And people would if we let them.
If they let us, we would. And so it's really striking that balance, but just starting with the thinking and the reflecting, the exploring. Asking really good questions, like you referenced several times already. That's how conversations start. The lost art of the conversation. I think so, a lot of it has to do with we operate so quickly, so fast thinking, and so you're always going to go to your default practice, your default approach when you have that fast thinking approach. And then, learning how to ask a really good question, especially when you're working with others, can really be that foundation point. And then thinking about I often think about our planning and things like that. I'll often think about training because that's always a robust kind of endeavor. And I think about how many times we sit down to plan training and we say, what do we want to do in training this year? Instead of sitting down with that committee or whoever it is and saying, what do we want to achieve
Achieve, yeah.
training this year? Fundamentally different conversation and fundamentally different planning approach. I think, the last thing I'll say there from kind of that first step that you asked about is, thinking. Sometimes it's just we think we don't have time for all this talk or all this reflection, things like that. I argue often that the investment in time on the front end saves us time, over the longevity of the endeavor. Because when we have that conversation about training, for example, of what do we want to achieve, we plan a structure that in that approach where we have clear outcomes, we have clear goals. Then the next year, when we revisit those, right? If we still want to achieve the same things, then we just have to go into, okay, what strategies work, what strategies didn't. And so over time, you're going to save quite a bit of time. But it's very opposite of the standard approach, right? And so often we don't give ourselves that space or create that space to do the reflective work because we feel like I've got to get this done now. So at its core level, it's pushing back against that fast thinking. Because we do have emergencies. Like we don't need to sit back and reflect when, we have a facility emergency or things of that nature.
Situational,
But, I think outside of that, we need to allow ourselves that slow thinking that actually leads to better practice and I would argue saves us time in the long.
I think the concept, because obviously the first time I heard of the concept of fast and slow thinking was in grad school with you. So when we would have conversations about things, especially like when we started doing case studies, we would always jump straight to the answer of, I don't want to say like assigning blame or something like that, but just the way that we would process things, it would jump straight to something. And I think that something that you did so well for us was like, well, let's unpack that a little bit, right? That was the best sales. That was the fa our favorite thing to say in class.
Ah,
So,
so many memories.
if you had to share a pivotal moment in your own experience, or maybe from a teacher, a faculty standpoint, of a moment of unlearning or having to lead someone to that, what did that look like? Tell us about it.
Oh, so many, so many. So one that comes to mind that I go back to often, and this was probably, goodness, 12 years ago now or so. So I was working with a first-year student success program that we were trying to grow our academic affairs collaboration, right? So by the nature of this program, some of it operated best being integrated into some of our first-year seminars and some of our first-year courses. And so I was gradually trying to build those partnerships and collaboration with different faculty. And there was one music faculty member who, was extremely dedicated to their students and student success. And he and I
Mm-hmm.
were meeting and we were talking about the possibility of integrating, this initiative as part of the course and what that could look like. And he had this moment of just pause, and you could see the trouble on his face. He was trying to think about and kind of how that would look and could look. And he's like, well, I guess, we don't have to cover this composer as much. That's where, and I remember in that moment of realizing, like, this was a, I knew him, I knew how much he was committed to his students, yet this was a really, really difficult decision. It's because his curriculum is also extremely valuable to him. And so in the moment, I learned about just how culturally humble we have to be, right? Because academic affairs and student affairs, fundamentally different cultures, right? And even intellectually humble, right? And not knowing, not thinking, I know exactly what you should do in order to do to integrate this, right? And so that moment is pivotal to me often because I learned about, I unlearned what collaboration looked like, right? And really it set the foundation for my thinking around how I need to approach things with intellectual and cultural humility to truly engage in collaborative work, right? So I think about that moment. You mentioned an instructor one as well. I think about, I'm pretty sure it's your cohort. They do all start blending together, but teaching that diversity in higher ed course, and I wanted to establish ground,
Ground
curriculum
rules on day
standards.
one.
Yes, yeah, you remember. In my heart was to, again, establish a way where we could have the hard conversation. And it was what, about halfway through where I realized that approach actually was stifling
Because some
our
of us were
conversation.
holding back more than others.
And so, I think about that moment as well, from an instructional standpoint of, unlearning and what does it look like to co-create those spaces, right? And so much of this is this idea of, co-creation and construction, right? You can't, if we view learning as, 100%, we achieve, learning of this one thing, you can't really unlearn and relearn in that space. Whereas view it as I'm constantly moving, then sometimes if, how my brain is wired leads me down a path that's not effective, I have to back up a little bit, get some perspective on that, and then look at, okay, what, would a new path look like? So, and that often involves, engaging others well, which we keep coming back to that comment, right? You made about the art of the sometimes challenging, sometimes, uncomfortable, but extremely productive, conversations. And they don't always have to be uncomfortable. It's just how
Some
often.
most of the I think most of the time they are, but not intentionally. So I mean, I didn't send this question, but you brought it up, so now I want to ask. What does that look like? So in those moments where you have to challenge someone's thought, whether it's a student or a colleague, how do you, I guess the word would probably just be recover the conversation or the point of where we like if the idea was to get here and we had to stumble a little bit, but what does that challenging look, what does that look like for you as the person that works with them or has to lead them?
That's a wonderful question. I think about, our the helping skills course when I went through the program, which goodness is almost 20 years ago.
Have to tell everybody.
Almost. I said almost. That course changed how I saw interacting with others and helping or leading or being supportive, anything in that space, because telling is a is not an effective strategy, right? Even when we know, when we are certain,
Think we know,
telling still isn't a great strategy. So in that case, you mentioned, I think the first thing is, do we establish that we do have a shared value or a shared goal, right? So do we want these conversations to be productive? Do we want this course to be successful? Do we want this program to be successful? If we're shared there, then you can ask questions around, like, based on how we're going right now, what do we anticipate the outcome to be? Right? Because that's not something we naturally sit around and think, right? So we have to create that Because again, we're programmed to be doers, so we're going and we're moving towards a shared goal, but we're taking very different approaches to that. Question, like, if we keep going and with this strategy, what do we anticipate the outcomes to be? Tells us to pause and stop and slow down and really examine. Then, asking things like, what could it look like if we included this component with it? Right. But again, we're not telling of like, I think we need to think about X, or we really need to, it's what could it look like? Right. It takes you away from that place of, those. And then, I think you have to think about power dynamics in this, in those conversations as well. If I, as the faculty member, for example, or as the supervisor, if I'm the one doing the telling, the structural power dynamics don't give the student or the colleague that you supervise permission to ask until you do. You have to purposely break down that dynamic. Sometimes you'll have colleagues who will ask, but it's we're not trained that way socially, and so we have to be very aware, because sometimes it's like, well, why didn't the student say something, or why didn't And it's like we have to create a space where they can, right? Where it's safe, and it's seen as productive, right? Where it's not even seen as a risk, but as an expectation to ask questions and engage in the dialogue.
I think one of my favorite things about being connected to you, but also just the community of UCA, is that the conversations never stop, right? And they don't stop, but they like some of the things that we talk about now, like when I texted, we were trying to plan something last week, but even when we were supposed to meet originally, it was all of these things are happening. So our conversation went from I had to move this to what's going on? Wait, what's the conversation? And there's always an intention between our type of faculty student, I'll always be your student, but that type of dynamic. So what dynamics do you think, because you mentioned power dynamics. So can you talk a little bit more about that from a colleague perspective when you're having to serve on committees with people where you should be equal, but maybe your level of understanding, because you've been able to unlearn things and be okay with it being different than what you're used to, or maybe other people, what would that look like, you think?
Again, I think humility is huge, right? And so humility allows you to explore, right? And so humility allows you to, even if you feel like inside, I've explored this deeper than the colleagues in the room, right? We don't know that. There might be significant evidence that would
I
support
know a little bit more, but
that. I think that's the first thing, is being able to look around a room and say, I can learn from that person and with that person, right? And that's easier said than done sometimes, right? That's a choice that we have to make sometimes. But then people surprise us. People surprise us in challenging ways sometimes. But I think we less often talk about how people surprise us in really good ways sometimes too, when again, the environment supports that, right? And so I think that would be, that humility would prompt you to ask the person, what ideas do you have? What are we missing here? Asking those good questions. And then I think about, we might all be the same positionally, but there's always dynamics, right? There's social dynamics, there's institutional capital dynamics. Right. Sometimes the most powerful person in the room is not the person with the most positional power
Or degree.
or degree, or the every room, we have these, there's definitely some, societal hierarchies and power dynamics and privileges and all of that. And then we take all that and we move it into a bunch of different rooms, right? And that stuff doesn't stop at the door. It gets mixed up in different ways at every door. Right? So like every meeting's different, right? Because you might have that colleague who, in that room, they are the person who, could totally take over if the environment allowed them to, or if they didn't approach with that humility. And then that same person might be in a meeting 2 hours later where they're the
And there's
unheard
somebody
of,
else.
right? And that's what makes this challenging, but also fascinating. And, it's just a huge opportunity for us to improve our work when we approach with that. So part of that unlearning process is just thinking about unlearning, like, what it means in these different spaces, right? To what does it look like to be intellectually and culturally humble
I
in a
think
different context?
that something that I know I wasn't prepared for in going into student affairs, higher education, learning about theory and stuff is how it would essentially shatter my worldview of things, right? And I mean, and you were there, you got to see a lot of those initial reactions, like, wait, what are you talking about? What do you mean I have to change this? And so for me, I was very fortunate to be in a cohort of people who were having the same types of experiences as me. And I mean, you two, we went through the same program just apart. What does it look like for you? Because unlearning still happens. Even after I've learned everything I thought I need to know, it's time for me to learn something else. What
Always.
does it look like for you if and when you struggle to have to unlearn something? Even now, you're esteemed and published and all the great things. So what does it look
Tenured.
like for you now?
No, I mean it goes back to the idea of it's a process. It's a way of moving and thinking, and it's more engaging, and it can help with burnout. It can help with, there, again, burnout's one of those topics. There's a lot of factors contributing
Research and
to
stuff.
that. Part of those factors are in our locus of control. Now, there's a lot of them that aren't. So I'm gonna clear the air with that. But then sometimes when we don't allow ourselves to explore, and there's ways to build excitement into your own work too. I think it literally is, if you dive into the neuroscience of it, you're literally changing your brain structure when you unlearn something, right? So, and I'm not a neuroscience expert. I just talk to people who are. So this is my little bit of learning after unlearning. But one of the famous sayings is neurons that fire together wire together. So like you're saying, those things that got shattered in grad school, well, they were there because over time that they those thoughts and emotions and beliefs all fired and wired together. So they had this really strong connection. And again, it takes someone who's willing to move slow enough to not respond to that initial firing and be willing to look at it a different way, right? And because we also have this thing called neuroplasticity, where when we make that intentional choice, things literally start shaping different and start rewiring, right? And so it's, for me, it's constantly thinking about that and thinking about, I have to ask myself, what have I unlearned? What is, when I find myself getting stagnant, okay, what have I not explored? Or even, a very, very practical, because I don't want to just live in the conceptual all day. I purpose in this role, I purposely need to interact with practitioners, right? And so I have to build in structures for that, where I then go and I'm asking them, like, because I haven't interacted with an undergraduate student in a meaningful way in 7 years. And that's,
Wow. When you think about it like that, yeah, that's crazy.
and I'm teaching people who will
Will, yeah.
on a daily basis. And so if I'm not at least talking to, the practitioners and learning about, what challenges are you facing, and what's changing, what's, like student engagement, we are unlearning and relearning what student engagement looks like right now, right? Because it's changed, and there's a million theories on why, and honestly, it's great to understand why, but we also need to think about what does it look like now, and what are we going to
What
do
are
with
we
it?
gonna do? Exactly. What are we gonna do? It's different now. So what are we gonna do?
And so, again, I think it's doing that environment scan to say, okay, where are there places where I'm going to have to force some unlearning on myself? I call it getting out of my cave, right? My faculty cave. I have a window now, though, so I guess I don't need to call it my cave. But I mean, again, like purposely, we can't just trust ourselves to be these super reflective, beings. Sometimes we build in structures to intentionally challenge, intentionally, again, kind of facilitate that unlearning process.
Yeah, I love it. I think one of my things that I will always be grateful for from just getting to interact with you on a regular basis is the fact that you made it okay to do that. And I don't think a lot of people get that experience. Like, I know just in meeting new colleagues and talk about their experience in grad school, I'm like, oh no, he used to let us just argue about it until he had to pull us back and bring us back together and draw the point. I'm like, no, we had the safety of that. But I think that the perspective and the knowledge, a lot of times you just don't get that until you're in a position to be forced to do it. So I love that that is something that you challenge yourself on, because I know I have to do that to myself too. And the comment that you made about having to engage with practitioners on a regular basis, same, same. Which is why I try to do the conferences that I do and just the relationships I try to build, because I don't get it on a regular basis where I work. So, with having to supervise RHCs, so it's just a little bit different. But you mentioned the trends are changing, like a couple things. So, talking about engagement, but are there any other trends? You don't have to name a bunch, but I know you, so you know probably all of them. But what other trends do you see changing that people are either struggling with, or practitioners are struggling with, or maybe more open to? So,
That was a really kind way of saying don't get on too many
you know, because we could go
soapboxes.
all day, okay? We only
I
got 40 minutes.
appreciate your framing there.
We gotta stay in the time frame.
No, I think the one I would highlight is, and it might be because I'm teaching the course right now, or just it's a passion area for me, as you know, is our assessment approach in the field. I understand, we have a very summative mindset. So this, like, when we think of assessment, I think we default to the idea of I need enough evidence so that my annual report looks good enough so that the people above me think I do good work, right? It's a very summative approach to assessment. And I think that's why assessment gets a bad name in the field so often, because nothing about that mindset is exciting or fun, right? So I really think about, what would it look like for us to break loose from that and truly take that formative approach of thinking about how do I use evidence to evaluate if I'm achieving what I want to achieve in my work? Here's the beauty of it. When that annual report comes around, you'll still have what you need, right? But you'll actually have much more valuable things to go along with it too, right? And so I think that's one big area of unlearning is, and again, it has historical backing because when the assessment movement started in higher ed, it very much was an accountability movement. Right? And so you still see those historical kind of patterns in how it emerges in the field. And again, we'll repeat that over and over again unless we intentionally start rewiring how we think about things.
That's so good. I think so. One of the things that I got tasked with this year is assessment, and I got to ours was with Benchworks. So doing like my one-on-one and talking to them. One, I think if people get into the mindset that assessment is supposed to help you, not hurt you, is the biggest thing. Because like I had to explain to my RHCs, like, no, 14 people coming to an event is like 14 people telling you walking down the street they like your T-shirt. That's 14 people and engagement. And so I think that's such a good one. But of course you said assessment. Why would you not? I love it.
But I mean, you just represented a beautiful unlearning, right? Of assessments to help, not hurt. That's that statement itself. You hear the unlearning and relearning in that statement.
And I think my brain computes that because it's been trained that way now. And it did not before, 2018, 2019, 2020. So I'm very appreciative, of course. So I think just because you shared so many gems, of course. But I think if you had to give any piece of advice for practitioners who are maybe new to this approach or are being forced into the approach of unlearning, what would you tell them?
So I think the last thing I would share is, really this isn't necessarily about change. It's about richness, right? So what I mean by that is sometimes when people engage in this kind of thought process or approach, the thought is, well, that means I need to do something fundamentally different. So what's interesting when you engage in unlearning, your final decision or action might be really similar or even identical, but the richness of your understanding that's guiding that will be fundamentally different, right? So this isn't purely a change process. Your brain's changing, but your behaviors might not drastically change, right? But the why and the motivation and the intentionality behind that will have fundamentally changed, right? You'll have a richer reasoning for engaging the way you engage. And then the last thing I'll say, because I know we're getting close on time, for leaders, and leader is a loaded term. If you have influence with anybody, you have leadership, right? If we want to foster this type of environment, we have to make calculated risk taking. Again, not recklessness, calculated risk taking.
Slow thinking,
Slow
slow thinking
thinking,
approach.
calculated risk taking, and mistakes, something we encourage, right? And so it will pay dividends in the long run over and over again. I was talking to a vice president literally this week or last week, and they were talking about how appreciative they are that their president allows them to take calculated risk. And when they make mistakes, when those things don't work, it's not this punishment environment. Again, if it's something that work and we can't just keep doing it, but again, that's why we engage in the process. But if calculated risk taking and not being perfect is punished, then there's no space for this reflective kind of practice. And that's, ultimately that will diminish what we're offering our students.
Well, as always, you are the guru of everything for me when it comes to talking about this stuff. But I love it. So for anybody listening that is either a mid-manager, an entry-level professional, or a senior level, a leader of a division or a faculty program, just remember that having the courage to unlearn is not as scary as it may seem. Because once you start, I guarantee you're not going to want to stop. Because the intentionality behind that of letting go of things that you've always known, it's been so refreshing living on the other side of that. So I love it. But thank you, Dr. B, for joining me. And I hope y'all enjoyed this episode of the Room Packed Res Ed Chat podcast today. And I will see y'all next time.